And we have a couple of guys joining us today, Christoph Brun and Kyle Fosberg. Am I pronouncing that right, Kyle? And
Fosberg. Yes.
All right. So we'll get that hard G in there. And they are playing a house show. You guys did a house show in Duluth last night, right?
That's correct, yeah.
How did that go?
Super, super well. For our music, you really can't beat this type of venue. I can't even really call it a venue. You can't beat this type of performance atmosphere because, you know, people are listening primarily. You know, for us as musicians, that's great. But secondly, you know, just getting people together in that sort of situation, in that predicament, is so much better than a traditional bar setting, at least for our music.
Oh, okay. And you don't play together. You each have your own separate musical careers, but you're both on Grasstops Recording, right? Mm-hmm. Which Kyle started, mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
And we're going to find out more about that. But why don't we have one of you get started with a song? What do you want to? Who wants to start? And
I can go ahead and start. I want to play a newer piece entitled Proclamation. This is going to be off an upcoming record. I really just finished the mixes this past week, so it's all real fresh. So let's do it. Proclamation. Thank you.
Just waiting for that guitar to...
Yeah, I gotta slow my heart down after that. It just builds so much, and I just, like, get super amped up, and then I have to go to the next song or whatever, and I have to really calm down after that.
So do you put thought into that when you are putting together a set list for a show?
Kind of, sort of. I don't know.
How to pace
it? I think
it?
Most of it, at least with the 12-string, it's just like, if I'm going to pick up the 12-string, I'm going to play all my tunes with it, and then that's going to be it. I'm not going to pick it up later. So like last night, I mean, I'm going to play this song that I did last night, too, in this set, but these two 12-string pieces I want to play today, like Proclamation for one and this other one, Entrance, they both start real quiet, and then they build up very intensely, and then it's just like, so I play one, then I have to calm myself down to start the next one, which mm-hmm. is like a lot more, you know, a lot more mellow than the previous the ending of the last one. So
something I'm always curious about for people who do primarily instrumental music is coming up with titles for the It seems like it would be a little tougher than if you have vocals.
I would kind of think so a little bit, maybe, because you can't really go off any lyrics, obviously. So mm-hmm. I think for me, it's just what phrase pops into your head, or what imagery does the music invoke? Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, you have to go off that. You know, it's instrumental, so I think it. Whenever you hear it, like when you hear a song like that, there's an image that is associated with it in your mind. Everybody, it's like when you read
it's Proclamation.
How did that title come about? That's, for that one?
For me, like I'll tell the actual real story. It's like, you know, there's four movements, four distinct build-up sections of that song. There's an A B section that just is built up four different times, and each time, you know, the first one you're like, yeah, and then the second one you're like, yeah, and then, you know, by the end of the last one you're standing up and you have your fist in the air and you're like, yeah, you know what? So that's kind of like Proclamation.
That's
right?
That's great.
That's it.
That's really great. All right. Like that. And last time you were here, Chris, you've been here before. Kyle, I don't think you've been here before.
Not.
Okay. But you were here a couple of years ago. You had just put out an album, and you talked a lot about some of your guitar influences. But I'm not sure if you talked about, because you started more as an electric guitarist, is that right? How did you end up evolving into what you're doing now?
It's real simple. I studied with Jim Cooper. There's a lot of guitarists.
Who has an office right upstairs.
Right upstairs. Bo 90.
And he's in the Fractals.
He's probably in there now.
Yep.
Teaching someone. I mean, Jim, you know, we went through everything. We went through jazz, we went through rock, we went through country, you know, and all that stuff. And that was all, you know, still electric. And then right towards the end of our lessons together, mm-hmm. This is like 3 years of just, you know, studying and hanging out and such. And then he showed me John Fahey, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I honestly, that was just like a hard break in my playing as a guitarist. It was just, I did not play electric guitar anymore, and I pretty much only played this, because I think part of it was just being frustrated with having to work with other musicians. And it's just, you know, I guess I always, you know, the previous band I was in, we were called The Real McCoys. We played a lot in like 2009, 2010. And it's just, it's getting getting everyone on the same page, you know, with your creative vision. And I wrote a lot of the songs. I didn't write all of them, but, you know, I wanted to take it a little more seriously. I wanted to play out. I wanted to be a little more active with it. And it was so difficult to get everyone else on board with. So then being able to compose and be a musician and really express yourself with just one guitar and not even vocals. I mean, that's what Fahey was doing and these other players were doing. And it was just really inspiring because I knew I had the technical capability to do it. And it was just like, getting into it and starting to write, it was just like, wow, I love this. I absolutely love this, and it feels really natural to me.
Wonderful. So in some ways, it was really freeing for you. But then I can see a downside to it, whereas a lot of places are probably eager to book a band to play. Very few places are friendly for, hey, I'm just a solo guitarist.
Right. And this brings us really back to the house concert thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why we found such good success doing that, because it really is, you know, a listener environment. And without that, we've got nothing. I mean, we have no power. We have definitely not enough power to overcome a drinking bar crowd, you know. So to have that is great for us, not only to share our music, to sell records, and to actually, you know, like actually make a little money, because people are, it means something to them. So they can actually, you know, feel to give what they think the concert was worth.
And your current tour, you guys are doing a whole tour of house concerts, right?
Yeah,
now,
we did
right?
one in April. 10-day tour, and then we've got something on the books right now for like 3 weeks in the West Coast.
And how do you go about booking that? It seems like it might be tougher than, you know, the established venues. How do you know, who the Peach Up people are to reach out to?
It's either just as easy or, if not easier. I mean, well, I should say just as hard, because booking venues is not easy. So, I think, like, I mean, it's beautiful because then, you know, suddenly you don't need a bona fide venue. You know, it's anyone who has space. Any DIY space can be, you know, your performance place. You know, someone's living room is so perfect because, you know, we don't need much. We can play acoustically if needed.
We have a niche following just with our music, but also just the label itself and this kind of music. We know people through Facebook and through, you know, all these social media things, you know, which is how we connect with them. So when it comes time to do planning a tour, we send out a mail and say, hey, you know, we're doing a house concert tour if you want to open up your living room and do this. And usually we get, you know, people that are interested. And then from there, you know, you do one, and then, you know, you meet maybe two or three more people at the show who want, next time you come through, they want to do one. So it's kind of incremental mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah, and it's so much, it's really natural way of doing it too, because, you know, you're not in the green room before the show, you're just another person at the place, and then social hour is over, and then, oh, and now I'm going to play some music, and it's, you know, it's so low-key, and I think people really dig it. And a lot of people are just like, I've never done something like this before. This is the first, I didn't even think that this was a thing. And, I mean, the people last night, same thing, and they were just like, wow, this was so refreshing to do something like this, so we love it. It's really the best, honestly.
Well, great, and it seems to be working out for you.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, I'm really excited to talk to you and find out more about your label that you started. But right, do you want to do a song
I'll
for
do
us
a song.
Right now?
I think
do
last time Chris was here, he did Last Steam Engine Train.
You got to do it. And
I'm doing
do
my, a different version of it.
Now, how do you know that?
Well, because it was on SoundCloud.
Oh,
I must have posted it. Yeah,
I think you did.
Point.
Somebody
okay.
did.
Okay.
And anyway, so the song was written by John Fahey, who's kind of a, you know, this, you know, the godfather of this kind of music.
And American primitive guitar, is that,
that's
is that
one
kind
label.
Of what,
yeah.
one label that yeah. people give it, you know.
Right.
You got to call things something
yep.
and so
yep.
that yeah.
So John Fahey wrote the song, but he says he stole it from Sam McGee. And then Leo Kottke took the song and really kind of made it his own. So most people know the Leo Kottke version. And I took the song and I really changed it like a lot. And so I call it the very last Steam Engine Train. So thank you.
That's Kyle Fosberg live from Studio A, along with Chris Brune. And that was a tune that Chris did last time
funky.
He was here.
Yeah.
And
very
apparently Kyle wanted to one-up him. So no, I'm teasing.
No, I have a lot of time on my hands. You know, Chris has a real job. And, you know, so you sit on your bed and you play the song this, you know, so many times. And finally you just start, hey,
I wish
I slide that up, do a little
like thing. That tune is a very major, like, you know, old-time tune. And Kyle throws in a bunch of minor dark stuff, and I'm just like real jealous. I didn't have that idea first.
No?
Well, and that's really interesting to me because, you know, we have sometimes we'll have like some traditional folk people in here, and that's such a tradition in that, you know, kind of music where you pass things on and change them. So apparently a tradition in this kind of music as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's such a fun song too, and it's like, I mean, again, it's one of those things you can have a lot of fun with. It's not serious,
mm-hmm.
you know, so what the heck, you play it 7 times and you start improvising. And if you listen to Leo Kaki do it now, he's like, he's just completely changing it. But he's been playing it for, you know, probably like 40 years. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So Kyle, since this is your first time here, where are you from and what's your musical background?
I'm from Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
Or the Twin Cities area, I should say. And I started this label, Grass Tops Recording, because two reasons. One was to put out my own music, because I wanted to keep control of it. I didn't want to, you know, sign it away or go on another label. And I could just keep total control over every aspect of it if I did it on my own label. So that was one reason. The other reason was there were many albums I wanted to reissue by other artists that are long out of print, you know. So I kind of was thinking about it, you know, it just sort of happened. You know, putting out, I need a label to put my records out. I need a label to reissue these on, and let's make it a thing. And the more that I did it, the more passionate I became about the whole thing, because I realized the power of it, all of this stuff being in one place, the old music that influences us, and then our own music. You know, it's like we're carrying on their tradition, and it's all under the same kind of umbrella. So, I mean, the label is a consolidation of everything I really love to do. You know, I get to, you know, do visual arts. I get to, you know, graphic design, music. I mean, I get to listen to music. I get to go out and hear bands. And I mean, there's so many elements of owning a label that really just send you right into the everything that I want to be doing all the
mm-hmm.
time. So
mm-hmm.
it's great.
So tell me about some of the artists that you're reissuing. There's Robbie Basho, mm-hmm. I think, is one. Tell me about him.
That's my biggest influence. I mean, that's really behind my whole style, why
and,
I play the way I do.
When did you first hear him?
I first heard him, I would say, probably about 4 years ago. And it feels like, you know, 20 years ago now, because I've just been so, you know, immersed in his life and his music for, you know, the last four years that I really crammed a lot into that time. But I first heard him 4 years ago, actually on YouTube, looking probably at John Fahey videos, you know, the suggested videos. So I started listening, and I just was, my mind was totally blown. And I said, the first album that I heard was Visions of the Country. And that was the one I said, I want to reissue this. And so a couple of years later, I did. And it was just an awesome experience. It was a lot of work, but it was an awesome experience to be able to do that. And I just said, you know, this guy's got a lot of music like this that's out of print. And he's got tons of stuff I know that's just sort of lost because he wasn't really that well known. So I sort of made it a mission to go out and find all of his lost recordings, his lost cassette tapes, and everything that just kind of fell by the wayside and fell through the cracks. And I've managed to uncover quite a bit of his music, and some of it is just absolutely, you know, like mind-blowing. And so when I do that, I have it remastered and restored by my producer, and we work together on that, and then I reissue, you know, it under the label in some way, you know, mm-hmm. depending on what the music is. But
and I think I was seeing, so he has passed away.
Yes, 1986.
Yeah, so he's an artist, but obviously his memory is being kept alive in a medium that he didn't even know about.
Yeah,
he
wished,
you know.
I'm sure he wished he did, because he had tape stacked at the ceiling in his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so what was it about Robbie? You know, you were listening to John Fahey and people like that. What was it about Robbie that was different and that changed things
he sang,
for you?
For one thing.
Okay, and you also sing.
I sing.
You're just going to do instrumental things today, but
I'm not like super fresh, and it's a little bit. I mean, usually right around evening, I start really loosening up, and my voice really comes alive.
Kyle's an evening person.
I'm an evening guy.
You're not a day dweller.
No, but I love to sing, and my the vocal style that I've employed in my music is totally influenced by him. It's very different. It's not copycat, but it's totally, you know, influenced by the way his style and how he approached music. And my guitar, too, for that matter. And my composition, all that stuff, has really sort of, you know, come from that whole idea, that way of thinking that he employed. So, what was the question?
I was just curious about what it was about him and John Fahey.
Right.
He was just instrumental, right?
So, he was.
So that was an element of, that was different with Robbie. And
well,
I was just curious about what was different and what struck you about him.
John Fahey was, compared to Robbie Bash, I would say he was more traditional. He did reworkings of blues music, folk music, and he would change them and really make them his own. You know, but Robbie had a different vision with music. He was really going for a really pure sense of inspiration with his music. It wasn't like John Fahey is channeling his darkest forces through the guitar. So you really hear that, and it's depressing, but it's honest. Where Basho was a total, like, he wanted to really make beautiful music. And so he kind of, you know, if there was a sense of, you know, angst or anger, frustration, something in his life, he somehow channeled that into his music, into something that was really beautiful. And in just a way that was so all-encompassing with his guitar and then his singing, which, I mean, he's, I would say, you know, just without a doubt, one of the finest male vocalists, you know, ever in history.
He's really good. I mean, seriously, his particularly his tremolo capability
yeah.
is just, like, unbelievable.
And his range. I mean, I don't know if anybody's familiar with Ima Sumac. She was, like, in the 50s, she was a huge sensation.
She's a Peruvian artist,
yes,
right?
And she had, like, a 5.5-octave range.
Mm-hmm.
I might be wrong about that, but it was something crazy. And Robbie, I think, is sort of like the male equivalent range-wise as, you know, maybe someone like that. But there's just, I mean, it's so hard to cram everything I want to say into...
This is great, though, because
yeah.
I was not familiar with him, and I was going on the Grasstops Recordings website, which is grasstopsrecording.com?
Yep.
Yes.
So if people are interested, you have reissued some of his albums on there, and so that's an opportunity for people to hear your music and his music
yeah.
right there. So.
And there's so much more to come. I mean, I've got more stuff from him that I'm currently planning to release than any of the newer artists put together.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in for a long ride.
Okay. Well, Chris, we're going to have you do something again.
And sure.
So you had put out an album last time you were here,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about doing something. And that one, I think, was not on the 12-string, as
that,
I recall.
Yeah, that one, the old record is called Weekends on the Frontier, and it's all 6-string instrumentals.
But you were thinking about doing something with 12-string,
yep.
and you were just saying, oh, I got to have new material, so is that...
Yeah, I mean, I knew I wanted to get into 12-string because it's just part of the lineage of the farm, you know, a lot of these players. I mean, Leo Kottke's first record is called 6 and 12-string guitar, so, you know, I listened to that a lot and definitely wanted to explore playing on a 12-string. It is, you know, what's strange is I didn't expect it to be as different as it is. It's remarkably different to play in fingerstyle. You really have to, like, be conscious of, like, where your melody is at because of how the strings are doubled in octaves and then your melody will change inherently based on what strings you're hitting. So, so the new record, it's going to be pretty much half and half, 6-string and 12-string compositions. And, you know, I like to be conscious of, you know, what I'm writing. And I like to, the next record is very much akin to the first in that it's, there's a little something for everyone. You know, there's longer compositions that are more dark and brooding, and then there's really traditional, you know, lighthearted pieces. So, and for 6-string and 12-string. So,
mm-hmm. Well, let's hear another one.
Sure. This tune is called Entrance. I'm just gonna check my, I had to retune a little bit, but I think I'm good. So I'll check that, and then we'll get going. Thank you.
Always got to wait for that guitar to stop ringing. such a wonderful tone.
That's my go-to ending. Just let it go.
Love the sound of the 12 strings. Just beautiful.
Me too.
And that was Christoph Bruhn live from Studio A. And so last time you were here, you were still living in Duluth.
Yes.
But you've since moved to the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
How long have you been down there?
Just about 2 years. No, a little bit more than 2 years. 2 years in September. So, it's been good. It's different. Good experience overall, though. I miss Duluth terribly. I'm up here very frequently. I think I've been up here 3 times in the last month for various things. So, we'll see in the future. I might be back.
and musically, is that where you met Kyle, or did you know Kyle?
Yeah, like Kyle had mentioned earlier, like, strangely, Facebook, honestly, somehow was the thing that united all these players, and we were just able to find each other easily, and like you see like who's friends with who, and it's been a good way to like just discover new music and what other people are doing, and that's really how it all started. I don't know if without that common thread, I don't think I probably would have met Kyle. So yeah,
or anybody else we know,
or anyone. yeah it's just weird how it worked like that, and that's how we kind of keep up on like who's doing what, because it is such a niche, you know, community of people, players and such. So
but they are very devoted, a lot of them, and they're, you know, extremely knowledgeable, and they really love the music. They're just spread out, you know, all throughout the country.
Yeah.
And the world, really. And Facebook, you know, if there's like a forum for an artist, you know, or like a website, they kind of like find each other on there, and Facebook, the fan pages and so forth. So you see comments and you say, hey, you know, who are you? I see. And then all of a sudden they know somebody who knows somebody, and the network forms.
Mm-hmm.
All because of this love of music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kyle, now I was looking at the Grasstops webpage, and boy, for a young guy, you have a lot of albums out.
I do put out a lot of stuff.
And do you just, are you very prolific as a songwriter, or...
It's not junk I'm putting out. I mean, it's
no,
good.
No, I'm not saying that at all. It's just rare these days. You know, it used to be the norm. You know, a band would put out maybe an album every 6 months, and nobody would bat an eye.
Right.
And now it's like, well, wow, you put out a lot of stuff. Are you a prolific writer?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the a lot of artists I've noticed didn't like that. It was in their agreement with the record label to do one album a year. It felt like you're just sort of forcing it. You contractually have to do this. Whereas I love it. I would put out, you know, 3 albums a year, but you have to space it out, or it's all just, you just put it all out there and people don't know what's what. And then it goes away after a while, and, you know, a couple years old, and you got to do something new. So I like to, if I have enough material to put stuff out more frequently, but you do have to space it out, and you have to let people appreciate each thing. And so the music sort of gets backed up because of that, you know, because I do write it at a faster pace than I'm putting it out. So I that's another thing about my own label, too. It's like I can put stuff out when I want to do it. It's just, you know, it's just me. I contract the artwork. Sometimes I do it myself. And then, you know, I do the mastering and usually the producing and the mixing myself, too. So it's just nice, you know, working as your own person.
Well, and tell me about your songwriting. Did you start as a guitarist, or did you start as a singer, and how did
you're a teenager, it's like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, sort of the standard things you start off listening to, and then you see, oh, they're doing a lot of blues music, what's that? And then you branch off, and then I started finding bands like Canned Heat and The Band in the 60s, who I still love, both of those groups. And then from there I found, you know, like traditional music. So you just kind of trace it, the lineage back, and it's a total natural thing. And but that's the folk thing, the traditional thing is kind of one side of my art. And then I have more of the classical, refined, you know, vocals. I would consider that my higher art. I think folk music is great and it's personal. It's kind of salt of the earth. But I have two different sides of my music, and it just they really balance each other out well, and they keep everything fresh. So. You know, and I go through phases, you know, I'll get into this, you know, one kind of thing, and then I'll kind of just, after a while, I'll go back to something different.
So do those things come together when you're performing, or are those...
Somehow they do. It took a while. Okay. I mean, because you're playing at a show, and, you know, it's hard to play like a Hank Williams song, and then go to play Robbie Basho. There's just no, like, semblance of this. It's just...
No.
But you know, if you're crazy enough, you can make it work. I'm not quite that crazy yet, but I'm getting there. And it does actually kind of, I've found a way to somehow bridge all of these things, and it's just, it's slowly being refined. But doing the house concerts is another great thing for that, because it's like everybody's listening, and you get to really hear how things, you know, come off and how they sound, and the audience responds. And whereas when you're playing a coffee shop, it doesn't matter, you know, because
it all sounds
noisy.
The same.
Yeah. So
it this also is the same amidst the grinder that's going
amidst
in the background.
Amidst the grinder, yeah.
So since I'm not that familiar with your music, I hadn't heard anything, you know, before we planned this interview. So tell me about that other side that you're talking about, the non-folk side. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Definitely inspired by Robbie Basho.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know that I would even be playing that if I had not heard him. I mean, he's the one that, in fact, I can tell you for sure I would not. I mean, he's the one that really, like, set me off in a new direction with that and just really helped me channel my own voice. I think that's what it was. I saw him, or I heard him, playing really what was I felt was him, you know, like an extension of himself in the music. And I just thought, you know, like, that's really inspiring. And I can hear that. And it made me do the same thing.
You want to try to find that authenticity in your music. And
yeah, and it wasn't a conscious thing, necessarily. It was just kind of that's what I started doing. My sound started developing like that. And I started playing more free-range guitar stuff. And then I started singing. It's not an operatic style. I don't like the word. I just can never think of a better term. But, you know, it's very clean, refined vocals, you
okay.
know. Whereas folk, you know, you can be a little more gritty. It's like it's the salt of the earth. I think it's a great term. And just natural.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so, you don't have to be pitch perfect.
So as far as your albums go, do you kind of alternate with those kind of styles?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do basically whatever I want. Like if I'm feeling like I want to make an album of like a bunch of like cowboy songs, you know, that's what's going to happen. And, but yeah, they're concept albums too. So I don't like, everything is really well structured. I don't just throw material on and say, well, this looks good and put it out. I mean, there's a theme with everything that I'm doing, all the albums. And
well, let's talk about, what's your most recent album? Let's talk
One
about
Night.
That. And what's that one, what style is that in, and what's the theme?
We'll just say Robbie Basho style. you know what I'm talking about now when
right,
I say that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was recorded in One Night, which is how we got the title, in a ballroom in Chicago. And north of Chicago, and it was under 3 hours, the whole session, and we just cranked it out, and it was like just one of those moments of like, this ballroom had just beautiful natural reverb, you know, tailor-made for my vocals and the sound, and when I heard it coming back that night, I was just super inspired, and it was like, that was it. It was just, so we got the whole album then, and we listened back to my producer and I, he's the one who booked the room and recorded it. And he recorded it, you know, really, really high quality, just phenomenal sound. I'm so happy with it. And we started listening back to it over the course of the year when I came back the following year. And he's like, yeah, you know, we should put it out. You know, how do we want to do it? And I started coming up with titles, and I just realized, you know, One Night from here, One Night from Chicago. None of it sounded, he's like, how about just One Night? I'm like, I love it. Just simplify this.
Mm-hmm.
One Night. And you know, the cover art came to us. It was a glass lantern slide from the early 1900s, hand-painted. And we saw it, we're just like, I have it out in the hall, I'll bring it in. But yeah, the whole thing, the whole package, the art, the music, just came together at its own pace. And really, I'm very proud of it. So.
And actually, I, as you're saying that, I'm picturing, I believe I saw the cover on the website. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
really
yeah
beautiful.
With the clouds and the horses.
Yeah, the stars.
Yeah. Yep.
Very beautiful. Well, I am so intrigued now about your music and Robbie Basho's music, and I'm hoping our listeners are as well.
I hope so.
From because I having not heard very much of it, you know, it's nice to kind of get a feel for what you sound like. And let's have one more song. What do you want to wrap up with here?
I'm not sure my guitar's in tune, so let me just... Thank you.
That's Kyle Fosburgh live from Studio A with Finally Free, another tune. Is that one on an album somewhere?
It was released, yes, as part of a compilation entitled Collection.
Okay.
Which is a collection of my EPs and singles.
Okay.
So.
And if you want to find out more about either of these guys, you can go to grasstopsrecording.com. That's kind of a main place, but you each have a Facebook page as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Christoph Bruhn and Kyle Fosburgh, and you're playing tomorrow night at a house concert in Mountain Iron. If anybody is listening and thinking, I really want to go to that, what would they need to do?
Just contact us. You know, we're pretty flexible about, you know, obviously these are private events technically, but, you know, we're just sharing a night of music and company and friends, especially if you're interested in this kind of music, then, you know, you're not going to see it anywhere else, so you better contact us.
And you'll probably get along with everybody else
in
the room.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we want to meet, you know, our fans and talk. That's another aspect of the house shows. It's like, we want to meet people. We want to talk to them. If you're into this music, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? Well, and it's great to see younger guys keeping this tradition alive, you know, because, you know, people like Leo Kottke have been doing this for a really long time, but I personally don't see a lot of, you know, new generation. So, you know, I think this is the first time in a while that we've had somebody in the studio kind of playing this style. So it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. I mean, it's you know, it's one thing to carry it on, also to try to propel it into the future a bit too and advance it, make it something that it never has been. So.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks so much, guys. I appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thank you.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Mike Nowitzki and Cheyenne Vavrina. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.